I would call the committee to order. Chairman Carlson, have you checked the minutes?
Yes, I have. I'll move approval of the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And it's approved. Representative Bunn, House File 1221.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
If I may, I'll move that House File 1221, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And, Mr. Chairman, there's been an amendment in the act that the members recall. This was a bill that was before us, and the amendment addresses some of the questions of purpose, so I'd like to move the amendment.
Okay, the amendment has been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. To be respectful of your time, I'm just going to briefly introduce the bill again and then one by one go through the 5 points that were raised, last time we met and tell you explicitly how they're addressed in the amendments. First of all, just to refresh your memory, this has to do with the overall Stillwater Crossing Project, or State Quarry River Crossing Project. That's the new bridge that will be built, currently on track to begin in 2013. This piece of it is part of the mitigation agreement, having a Stillwater Lift Bridge Advisory Committee was formed. And as part of the mitigation package with regards to the new crossing, the old Stillwater Lift Bridge is going to be converted to a pedestrian bicycling bridge. This bill before you is unique in that we are creating an endowment account for funds to be used for the basic operation maintenance of that bicycle footbridge once it has been converted to those purposes. This is a department agency bill. And during the committee hearing when I was here last, five different issues were raised. First of all, we had some language to change this in line 1.5. Last time, the original bill had language about a special funds account. Then we changed it to a gift account, and then there was further discussion on that with Representative Buskins asking whether the state had ever put money in a gift account previously. Bill Marks has gone back and forth with the agency on this, and this is a unique account of which type that they have not created before, and they decide in the end they're not quite sure where they want to put this account, and that they very much ask Bill Marks to recommend to us that we have general language for this purpose. So in line 1.5, in response to that discussion, the language account is established in the state treasury. The in the state treasury language was intended to leave this at the future discretion of the agency to determine exactly what kind of account this should be in down the road, because they're still working on how that should be accomplished. Secondly, an issue, I'm going to go in the order that they appear in the amendment here. Secondly, an issue was raised by Representative Slawick as to our general concerns about money in accounts like this being removed and used for other purposes during difficult times. Language has been put in the amendment here to address that concern. It starts on line 1.11 and extends to 1.14. Starting on 1.11 with the word no after the period, the language included to address that is the following. No money from this account may be used for any purposes except those described in this section, comma. And no money from this account may be transferred to any other account in the state's treasury without specific legislative authorization. So you all are familiar with state law around this issue of using funds from the accounts. This is the extent that we can try to address that for this bill. Secondly, issues were raised by both Zimmer and Howes as to two things in terms of the final disposition of this account. If for any reason it was determined that the bridge had to be demolished, Representative Enner raised the issue of, since some of these are contributions from people who want to support historic preservation purposes, wouldn't they be offended or put off by the fact that this might be used for demolition purposes? And Representative Howes raised the issue, what if after demolition there were some funds remaining in this account, how would they be dispersed? The language to address these two concerns begins on page at 2.13 on the second page and extends to 2.17, starting with the word except after the comma. So this is the language to address both Representative Immer and Howe's concerns. Comma. So the sentence has to do with how the principal account may be spent to pay for demolition of the bridge and can be appropriated by the commissioner for that purpose, but then there's some exception language, and that's what addresses their concerns. Comma, quote, except that only funds originally contributed by the state or federal government can be used to pay for demolition. Period, any money remaining in the account after demolition must be used to pay for the preservation of other historic bridges in consultation with the state historic preservation office. Now, it's generally the opinion of those involved in this that if we came to the point of demolition, it would probably completely and more than completely exhaust whatever money's in this account. That would be an expensive endeavor. But this is just saying whatever funds were contributed by and gifts by individuals and others for the purposes of historic preservation would continue to be used for that purpose. It's only state and federal monies that would be used for the demolition purposes. Finally, Representative Solberg had concerns that the original language was did not have sufficient statutory oversight regarding the appropriation, that it was an ongoing type of appropriation rather than statutory. And so this standing purpose rather than statutory, this is addressed in the last paragraph of the amendment. Starting in 2.19, the appropriation language is in 2.1. Then 2.19, it essentially, starting with the word the commissioner, it says the commissioner of transportation shall report annually to the chair and ranking minority member of each legislative committee with jurisdiction over transportation on the endowment account. At minimum, the report must include detailed revenue and expenditure information. We discussed this language with Representative Solberg last week, and this met with his approval, I believe. So we strove to address all five issues that were raised as best we could prior to coming forward before you again. This language, everything I just described, has already been adopted in the Senate in this form. So if we adopt this amendment today, the Senate and House versions would now be the same. I stand for questions.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bunn, thank you for your work on putting together this amendment. But I do have a fundamental question. Could you explain to us why we would go through these machinations and not simply create a 501c3 to accept the gifts and the money, apply for federal grants, apply for state grants, etc.? Why we would use this tool rather than creation of a nonprofit?
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dixon, I'll ask the department if they can address that for you.
Welcome to the committee. If you state your name for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Todd Kwartowski. I work for the Minnesota Department of Transportation as Metro District East Area Engineer. Development of the fund has been identified as one of the mitigation items for the St. Croix River Crossing project. During that negotiation with the stakeholder process and through a public process, we've identified the establishment of an endowment fund for that mitigation item. Provided that direction from that mitigation package, we have continued to negotiate the different elements of that endowment fund to arrive at our endowment fund as we've identified it in this proposed legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not quite sure I got an answer to the question why not just create a 501c3, which could create an endowment fund also. I'm curious about the investment component on page 2, lines 8 and 9, and what kind of precedent we are setting in creating this endowment fund within the state treasury. Is every single public historic place now going to be looking for the State Board of Investment and using their leverage in investment using public dollars to using their leverage to invest their basically private endowment funds, and what kind of stress is that going to put on the system when we have 1,500 public historic entities that are now using the State Board of Investment to invest their funds?
Mr. Krutowski.
Yes, as part of the process to develop this proposed legislation, we identified and worked with the State Board of Investment to further refine this legislation.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Representative Schiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question has to do, if you can give a little more explanation, I don't recall the financial compliance 2.4, 2.7. It seemed to be very detailed, but if you could just explain why the choice of those compliance. It seems like most of these things are audited, and there is the usual auditing which includes these things. So I was wondering if there was anything distinctive to this as what might be considered the usual.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask Mr. Kopowski to address that as well.
Our approach in developing this legislation was to use our standarding auditing procedures that are available. That was the intent of this legislation.
Okay, no, Mr. Chairman, if this is what you normally do, this is in language elsewhere, this exact same language is elsewhere. All of these things are listed elsewhere on other things that you do. I'm just curious, is this what normally is done, then would I find it elsewhere? Or is there something added here?
Mr. Karnowski.
The Chair and Representative, this is a standard recommendation from our Office of Finance within our Department of Transportation on an auditing recommendations for to financial compliance.
Okay.
Any other questions? Questions? Representative Bunn?
Thank you, members. And just to represent Bootkin's points just briefly, I think that the purpose of this bridge is not just for historic preservation. It's multiple purposes, and it's part of an overall transportation system to that region, and is more than just historic preservation. It's also going to be part of essentially, you know, parks and trails and all kinds of things, and part of the general transportation planning for that area in conjunction with the new bridge. So it's not just a standalone historic preservation project. So I think they view it as part of their overall transportation, you know, funding initiative.
Seeing no other discussion, Representative Carlson renews his motion to, as amended, be recommended for passage, and we refer to the committee in Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Representative Solberg. Chair of House File 2251. Representative Kahn.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move State Government Finance Division report to House File 2251, the first committee in Grossman.
And Representative Colbert.
Mr. Chair, I move the House File 2251, the first committee in Grossman.
Excuse me.
We have to vote on that first.
I have to vote. We have to vote on it.
Yep.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Colbert, again.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 2251, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass, and refer to the committee in Ways and Means. Mr. Chairman, this is the second request from the Governor's Office of the Department of Management and Budget on a deficiency bill. It deals, the request came from the Department of Management and Budget, and we worked strongly with them to make sure that any request for deficiency comes through them first. They did request $1.6 million to do the necessary planning and auditing for the federal stimulus money within that. As you know, the federal government is requesting a great deal of accountability within the federal stimulus money, or the Recovery Act money. from of the 1.6 that we had some hearings, and there are, we've cut that down a little bit for this 2009. This is appropriations for 2009. 1.084 for the total amount of that, $700,000 goes to the Department of Finance, and $384 goes to the auditor, state auditor, for compliance of expenses that she will have as she tracks the local units of government expenditure of the Recovery Act. I do have an Amendment A1 that I would like to offer. That's been brought to us by the department as well. If you let me offer that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'd like to amend House File 2251 with the Amendment H2251A1.
An amendment has been offered. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, probably I'll let the Representative Huntley address it. This also came over then from the Department of Management and Budget. It's a requirement from the Recovery Act that has to do with some funds that went from the Department of Health Human Services to Hennepin County, and so Representative Huntley, if I can ask him to address that.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, this is basically a requirement from the that relates to the strings with the Reinvestment and Recovery Act in Washington. Currently, Hennepin County gives the state some money for medical assistance, and that counts as part of the state share. The stimulus package says that we cannot increase any maintenance of effort for local units of government, and the way that our law was written, they would have had to do that. So this simply changes the amount that Hennepin County is giving to the state for medical assistance and the rate at which they get paid back for that. As I said, it's supported by the administration. It's in the Senate bill, and there's a $2 million cost to us, which is being carried in the Health and Human Services Finance Bill. And the net, however, is if we spend that $2 million in this way, we will get $1.8 billion of stimulus money.
Mr. Chairman, this is then, in effect, kind of a technical amendment that came in that said from the federal stimulus money or the Recovery Act money that the department has to have in order for us to access those funds.
I believe there's further discussion. Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Solberg, what happens if they don't use the money?
Representative Solberg.
All of it. Does it come back in some fashion? Or?
Mr. Chairman, are you talking about not the amendment? Are you talking about the amendment or otherwise?
Otherwise.
No.
Okay. Well, the I think that the request is for $1.6 million. We are down to 1.084. We're trying to deal with the cost of the 09 thing, and I think it's fairly well fine-tuned, their requirements. The additional 500,000 will be carried in Representative Kahn's bill as it comes through the next, and she has held hearings on that with both the administration and the auditor, and I don't know how that's going to be put, but she has done that
All right.
Any further discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Pass. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, if there are no other questions, I would renew my motion that House File 2251, First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to Ways and Means.
Representative Solberg has renewed his motion. Any questions? Representative Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, I was looking for it. Maybe I'm just not seeing it.
in terms of the reporting back and having this money being used for transparency and so forth, how is the public and the legislature going to know how the funds are spent? Is there going to be a website or a report, or how is that going to work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, are you talking about the American Recovery Act?
Yes.
Expenditures? I think there are several things that are happening. There's some very strong requirements, my understanding is, from the federal government on the accounting procedures, and so there would be a report on the normal accounting fashions as well. That same thing is true with the state auditor. I have some requirements for local units of government to do the reporting. Additionally, I think that the administration is in the process of establishing some very strong public information gathering procedures, including websites. And the third thing is that the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy has had several hearings and will continue to have oversight from a legislative standpoint on the expenditure of this particular fund.
Okay. Thank you. As Mr. Chair, as I see, we're giving computers and technical services and all kinds of things. So, great. Thank you.
Any other discussion? One question? Seeing none, Representative Solberg removes his motion as amended that House File 2251 be recommended to pass and re-refer to committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. House File 877, Representative Horstman. Representative Lugini is here. Yeah.
I will move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for House File 877, the First Committee Engrossment.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Wagenius.
I move House File 877, the First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I think the motion would be to the general register because there's no general fund impact for this.
I would be happy to amend my motion, Mr. Chair.
All right. All right, why don't you go forward and present your bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, it's a very simple bill. What it does is it directs the Pollution Control Agency to apply for competitive grant funds that are available under the Federal Economic Stimulus Package. That they're not currently planning to apply for these competitive grant funds. It's for a diesel emission reduction program. And we have received $1.7 million of formula money. But we're not going for the competitive money. We're leaving it to people in the private sector of Minnesota to compete for the competitive grant portion of the diesel emission reduction money. And the Minnesota Trucking Association has been working for several years to try to get a funding source to start a program that would help them their members afford diesel emission control devices on their trucks. And what this bill would do is direct the PCA to apply for the funding, and if they get the funding, to establish that program.
Thank you. Any discussion? Representative Simon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Horton, just a question. Why on earth are we not applying for this? What explanation is there for not applying for this money?
Mr. Chair and Representative Simon, the Pollution Control Agency has a very good relationship with a public-private group called Project Green Fleet that's run by the Minnesota Environmental Initiative. And they have some private funding partners, and they get some money from the Pollution Control Agency. And that Project Green Fleet is doing a very good job of retrofitting school buses with diesel emission control equipment. And so PCA is content to let Project Green Fleet compete for the money.
Representative Simon. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fortman, it's my understanding that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act is meant to help struggling businesses in the area. Up on line 2.1, grant funds may be used for purchase and installation costs. Representative Fortman, can you tell us the businesses in Minnesota that will be helped by this, or are these products made in other states and we're actually going to be helping them through this program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dishkin, I believe there's a company based in Minnesota called Donaldson Companies that actually produces some of the diesel emission control equipment. But the people that this would benefit most directly would be the trucking companies in Minnesota. And the way that the grant program is set up, by design, by the legislation crafted by the Minnesota Trucking Association, is to direct the relief at smaller firms.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question, Representative Fortman. I believe you said that this program would go forward if the grants from the federal government, if federal government funds are secured. Where would I find that if statement in the language before us?
Representative Fortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dishkin, I believe that lines 2.19 and to 2.25.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Fortman, I don't see anywhere in this section that says that if I see where the agency must submit an application, but I don't see anywhere in here that if their application is rejected and no funds are forthcoming, that this program then is on, pardon the pun, on idle until the money is forthcoming.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, if they don't get the federal money, there is no money to implement the program. There's no appropriation anywhere to fund the program.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Horman and Biskins, if you look at 2.17, it says the program shall be implemented only if the agency's application for federal funding is successful. So it's very clear in the language.
Representative Fulbert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hartman is the commissioner of the Commissioner of Transportation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fulbert is the commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency.
Okay. Mr. Chair,
Fulbert.
One of the questions I have is the reporting to the legislature on expenditures of these funds, and there's no reporting of anything or appropriation. You have any funds that are awarded are automatically appropriated, but it'd be kind of nice to see if they actually get any funds, or if it's and if they use it in the correct way. Would you be? And I don't have an amendment available, but I would hope that you would draft something with Mr. Marks and myself for the House floor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that's a good idea. I think that the grant money will be distributed when we're not in session, or hopefully when we're not in session in June or July. And so we'll work on something that makes it so we get to see what happens, but so that they can spend the money without further action by us.
Any other discussion or questions? Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fortman, I'm curious about your answer regarding the agency's desire to just let Project Green Fleet pursue the money. And I know you've been tracking this issue to some degree, but are we in a position at the legislature where every finance committee has to be doing the work of the agencies to identify potential sources of federal funds out there to accomplish what we want? Or do you think that this sort of, maybe I'm mischaracterizing it, but it seems a little bit of a lackadaisical attitude about trying to bring as much of the federal dollars to Minnesota as we can. Is that typical of what's going on out there, or should we all be taking a special focus on this?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, this came to my attention when I read the, I think it was a 140-page attachment that Bill Marks sent out to us and sometime in February, with the Office of Management and Budget had indicated which funds they were applying for, each of the agencies, and which they weren't. And I have a special interest in the diesel emissions program. So I looked to see if they were applying for those funds because I had heard that that was part of the stimulus package. I didn't look, I haven't read the whole thing to find out what other competitive grants there may be out there that we aren't applying for. I hope that we're being pretty aggressive in all areas, but I think it depends on the agency and the commissioners and what their areas of emphasis are.
So, Mr. Chairman, Portman, good work for maybe people who are not as busy right now would be to go through and look at their issue areas and try to identify grants or monies that we're not, agencies aren't planning to apply for right now, and to start getting more of these types of bills going to indicate that we actually do want to bring some of the recovery dollars back to Minnesota.
This is Representative Winkler, but the clock is ticking. The deadlines for many of these programs are really very, very soon.
Any other questions or discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wagenius renews her motion in House File 877. Be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. Motion passes. Representative Hortman, we have another bill, do we?
Two more.
Representative Wagenius.
I move the Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Division report for House File 2175, the First Committee on Grossness.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Wagenius.
I move House File 2175, the First Committee on Grossness, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is exactly the same idea as the previous bill, but this would require an application be submitted on behalf of public transit agencies in Minnesota. The smallest grant that will be given is $2 million, so the Pollution Control Agency would need to aggregate requests from smaller public transit agencies across the state. The Metropolitan Council is big enough, and they have a staff. They can do it on their own, but the Pollution Control Agency would work with the smaller departments to see if we can't help get some funding to buy new buses.
You, Representative Stonke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of following up on the last one and thinking this through too, why is the Pollution Control Agency doing these grant applications? Number one, why doesn't Met Council do their own? And number two, why wouldn't it be the Department of Transportation who now works with these small companies to award grants and buy buses and do other things through their Department of Transit? Why are we putting another middleman in there, the Department of Pollution Control, to do this, as opposed to people that work directly with these buses?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jenke, because the federal program that they're applying for money under is a pollution control program, and the Pollution Control Agency has a diesel emissions reduction program, and part of their program already is to make grants and loans to trucks and buses, so it fits with what the PCA is already doing and is different from the capital investment money that MnDOT gives to transit agencies to buy buses, because this is specifically for either diesel emission pollution control devices or buses that are shown to emit less diesel pollution.
And again, Mr. Chair, that's fine. I have to wonder why they're doing it. I can't imagine it's just PCA that can apply for federal EPA grants. I would assume anyone can do that, and it just seems to me that it's an added step within the process to go to a different agency and then have that agency appropriate over to another agency, and it's not as clean. I know there's other agencies, Department of Agriculture, for example, that we oversee, that are requesting Department of Energy funds for biofuels and other things. So I know you can cross departments when you apply for federal money, so I'm... I think it's an added step, but if that's what you want to do, that's fine.
Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jenke, it's just the staff at the Pollution Control Agency has the expertise to submit this application with relatively little effort because they oversee the existing program.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wagenius renews her motion. So, move House File 2175, recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion passes. Representative Hortman, we have House filed 267. Representative Carlson will have to call on.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Public Safety Finance Division report for House File 267, First Committee of Growth and Development.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I move that Senate File 99 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
And Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I would ask you, do you want to take up the amendment now? Or after you?
I would like to take up the amendment, but I don't want to work from the Senate file. I think I missed what the first motion was. In the first motion, did we put the House file language into the Senate file?
Not yet.
Okay.
We'll do that now.
Yeah, that's what we're about to do. Okay, please.
We delete the language from the Senate File 99 and insert the language from the House File 267, the First Committee, which we wrote and as amended.
All right. And then we have a... okay, the motion before us in discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We have a author's amendment, do we?
No. I was referencing the motion on the Senate side. I don't know, is there an amendment, Mr. Chairman?
Just passed out.
Oh, it just passed out. Mr. Chairman, I'll move the author's amendment for House File 267.
Representative Hortman, would you explain the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, didn't we insert the House language in the Senate file? If we did, then the amendment before us would have to be amended to show it's amending the Senate file as amended. Am I correct or am I off lunch?
I believe you.
We don't have the Senate file before.
Yeah. Well, no,
if we have the Senate file before us, then this amendment would have to be corrected.
Can Representative Carlson incorporate that change into the amendment? Be amending the Senate file as amended instead of the House file?
Yeah. That is correct. Could you explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This amendment is a technical addition of language that makes us qualify for federal funding if at any point in the future our statute complies with the other requirements to get federal funding.
Now, any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No. Amendment passes. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. This bill is a pretty simple bill. It's about child passenger restraints in motor vehicles. Our current law requires that any child up to the age of 4 be restrained in a proper child passenger restraint system. And what this would do is update our law to require any child up to the age of 8 or when the child reaches 4 feet 9 inches. 44 other states in the country have updated their laws to the more modern age requirement. And the reason for that is the adult seatbelt is designed to fit over your bony structure, and a child's bone structure is smaller, and therefore the adult seatbelt doesn't fit the child properly unless the child is lifted. And when the child's lifted, then the seatbelt goes over their hips and their shoulder, more effectively preventing injury and then also preventing some of the injuries that come with an improperly fitting seatbelt.
Any questions? Representative Schiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman, are we on the amendment or is the bill in the shape the author wants it at this time?
We're in the bill in the shape that the author wishes.
All right. Thank you very much. I wanted to be sure that process was completed. Being a grandparent, I'm looking at saying, okay, I can have 6 grandkids in my car at one time. Does this mean shuffling booster seats around? I mean, is there this isn't just for parents. Anybody who is driving?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes, this is for anybody who's driving, but what it requires, the same as the existing booster seat language and the existing seatbelt law, is that the seatbelt is only required to be used in a booster seat where there's currently a seatbelt installed in the vehicle. So in your back seat of your car as a grandmother, if you can fit three children in three different seatbelts, and if they were all over the age of eight, you would only have to have three of the kids buckled up if you had five kids back there. My understanding is you wouldn't be violating current law. And the current booster seat law is if you had three four-year-olds back there, you'd have to have three, you know, four-year-olds in booster seats. But where they're in the spaces in between where there's not a seatbelt installed, you would not be required to put another booster seat. So you wouldn't be required to wedge booster seats in to a greater degree than what the vehicle's designed.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I'm sure it's not only just grandparents, but I'm sure there's moms carpooling as well, that this has a fiscal impact on people. And I certainly do respect the fact that this is very valuable, and I've read those statistics and all of that, but I'm also looking at a very difficult financial time for some people. Granted, a child's life is well worth that, but nonetheless, it is going to have a fiscal impact on people, and I think we should at least recognize that when we're dealing with legislation of this sort, especially during this kind of time. Is this effective date? I've noticed that's July 1st, 2009.
Representative Hortman.
That's correct.
Okay. I was just trying to look for a way to kind of ease into it a little bit just because of knowing that people are in a really hard fiscal time right now to comply with that, although I agree a child's life is well worth that, but I just was considering that.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Hortman.
We have made a couple of changes to the bill since it was introduced to sort of accommodate that reality. Representative Holberg moved an amendment that the fine must be waived if a parent provides a receipt of getting a booster seat within 2 weeks of the violation. And there are several agencies in Minnesota that help families, needy families, to get the proper seat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, having purchased many of these myself to help our families, I'm sure we'll appreciate those kinds of things, and I'm sure other grandparents will step up and have no problem with this. Thank you.
Representative Biffkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hortman, would violation of this new language be a primary or a secondary offense?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biffkin, it doesn't change the nature of the existing statute, and the existing booster seat law in Minnesota is a primary violation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or discussion?
Chairman, I'd like to renew my motion. As amended,
right.
House File 99, the recommended to pass as amended to University Stadium.
Representative Carlson renews his motion that House File 267, as amended, be recommended to pass.
Senate File 99, I think.
Oh, excuse me. That's right, Senate File 99. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
Representative Hilke, next. Representative Hilke, would you like to move your
I would,
bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move the Senate File 656 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Representative Hilke.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate File 656 is a very simple bill that directs the Legislative Energy Commission to do an analysis, a study of appliance standards that conceivably could be adopted in the state, considering such factors as the appliance market, consumer cost in purchasing and operating the appliance, technical ability to comply with a standard, and energy savings achievable.
the bill.
That's the bill.
Thanks.
Members, we'll stand for questions.
Any questions or discussion? Representative Diffkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, we're asking a commission to do a study and create a report. Representative Hilty, was a fiscal note requested for this legislation?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Diffkin, there is a fiscal note. The presumption made in the fiscal note is that the commission would hire an analyst to conduct this study. I'm not sure that that would be the case, but if we did that, the fiscal note makes an estimate of $81,000 for the cost of the study. Personally, my feeling is that staff in the House and Senate could probably conduct a study without hiring someone from outside.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I did find it in our packet. I was looking for Representative Hilty, but there's a senator's name on this fiscal note, but thank you.
Any other discussion or questions? Seeing none, Representative Hilty moves Senate File 656 to recommend it pass. Oh, excuse me. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just have one question. Having read recently about some of these energy efficiencies, would this study include studying the leaking of energy?
Representative Hilton.
pardon me. Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, it's not one of the things that is listed in the study, but the list of things that the study must include is certainly not exhaustive, and I think that would be a good thing to consider.
Representative Kiffmeyer. Any other discussion? Any questions? Seeing none, Representative Hilty moves Senate File 656 to be recommended for pass and passed and placed on the general register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
I think we'll have to see a show of hands. All those in favor of the Hilty motion, raise your hand. All those opposed? So it was 15-5. The motion passes. Representative Solberg, House File 2038. Representative Kahn?
I move the State Government Finance Division report to House File 2038 for first committee endorsement.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Solberg.
I'll be there in just a sec.
All right.
Chair, I move the House File 2038. The first engrossment be recommended to pass, and we refer to the committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Solberg, you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment. Let me, first of all, explain the bill. This started out to be a very comprehensive bill, and we had a hearing on in state government finance, and the fiscal note came through with about $443,000, I think, on some of the requirements that ran it. But we did meet, work with the Department of Management and Budget and they testified that there are a couple of things that we need to, that they would like to see us do and in this bill. So that's kind of what's left of it after the first meeting. The second one is a report on budget reserve percentages to be able to have a little bit better understanding of what we really need to have as a budget reserve in percentages. And the second thing that's in here is a study that has them to conduct some study on cash flow. There's a question on really what we need in cash flow. The department has had some historical data that they presented to us in the committee. It was kind of interesting at some particular points in their history. They have an awful lot of money available, and at some points they actually have very little money on hand. The interesting thing is it varies from year to year, and we do need to have enough money to pay our bills. They do have the ability all the time to be able to transfer from general fund to transportation fund if the transportation fund is short of paying its bills, but that has to be done within the biennium. They cannot end up with the general fund being short within its biennium. And so this one really says to the department, and they want to do this, to have a decent study of what the cash flow account really needs to be. We have $350 in the cash flow account. I remember about 10 years ago, they said, well, we need $280. It was $350. We dropped it down to $280. But this will give them some direction on to report to us what that cash flow account needs to be. And then there is an amendment that I would like to offer. It's the A09-0389 amendment. And there needs to be a couple of changes that I would like to incorporate into that amendment. On page 1.2 of the amendment, that's page 2 instead of page 5, after line 16, and it would be section 2 on line 1.3, change the 9 to a 2. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to incorporate those changes into this amendment and offer that amendment.
Has everyone on the committee seen the changes?
Those are technical changes.
Any discussion or questions?
And, Mr. Chairman, let me explain the amendment. This kind of comes from us, from interest of Representative Loffler and others that deal with the milestones. Milestones is an initiative of the governor that's been around for a while, but he's renewed it, and Commissioner Badgerow has been very active in the milestones and some of the other activities associated with it, and this would give us the recommended report on these trends of some of the demographic analysis within the milestones.
Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Carlson?
Chairman, maybe Mr. Marks could comment, but it looks like there's a potential cost to Representative Fulbert.
Okay. Representative Fulbert.
Of the amendment?
That's correct.
Okay.
Obviously.
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chair, if it's the cost, we'll try to address that in ways and means. Unless the commissioner wants to ask that question. And by the way, members, I read in the paper that the commissioner is leaving state government. I don't know if they're going to allow her to do that. She's been an extremely good commissioner under two governors.
Sorry?
Under two governors, so I think that speaks highly of her abilities within that. And we've always had some disagreements one time, but she's never been disagreeable, and I'll also tell you that I thought she has done an excellent job in being a commissioner of the Department of Administration.
Thank you.
Before she testifies, I too would like to thank her. In fact, I've had an opportunity to serve with her on some committees and commissions, I guess we called one outside of the legislative committees and had an opportunity to get to know her there. I want to thank her for her service to the state of Minnesota. We're not sure where you're going. I don't know.
Oh, I know.
If you care to share that, fine, and if not...
Madam Commissioner, if you state your name for the record.
And members, I'm Dana Badgerow, the Commissioner of Administration, for another 3 weeks. I'm going to try to get the Department of Administration far along in the budget process as I possibly can. I'm going to be the CEO and President of the Better Business Bureau of Minnesota and North Dakota. So, I've loved this job, I have to say, and it's, I love it still, but I'd like to work beyond the second Palenque term. So, this job opportunity presented itself.
That indicates that Palenque is not going to be...
Representative Solberg, I wish I knew, but since I don't, I'm having to hedge my bets. Let me just simply say that we've been working both with the House and Senate on the Minnesota milestones and keeping them revitalized. We gave a report to the legislature on March 6th about what it would take to revitalize the milestones, which, by the way, date back to the mid-90s. They're really out of date. The last update at all was done in 2001, so they're at least 8 years out of date in terms of what really ought to be our long-range goals and what are the performance metrics for those goals. So some effort would really be required in updating them to get public input as to what those goals ought to be and some of the measurables. Last time there was an extensive public input process. Now there's hope here. And by the way, I'm representing the demographer who is off seeing his son be married this week, and this is really his work and his bailiwick. Mr. Gillespie has indicated that he has the opportunity, we think we have the opportunity to piggyback or leverage work that's being done by the Wilder Foundation currently. They have a Compass project which has done a lot of this kind of goal setting and measurement process for the metropolitan area. They're now extending that statewide. But we don't necessarily believe that we can adopt wholesale whatever Wilder may come up with. We believe state government needs to have an involvement and own and have some input into what those look like, since we'll be using them to guide our activities. We think, actually, if we can parlay the Wilder activity, we believe that one person would be required. The original report suggested four people would be required to revitalize milestones and create the website and so forth. But we believe that one person working with Wilder could do this. The cost of one person, friends, benefits, and so forth, and all of the office expenses is $87,000. So we think that's kind of the bare minimum. This is Mr. Gillespie's opinion. We can question him on that, but we think that's probably what would be required to get this done right.
You represent this then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you, Representative Solberg. I think Representative Carlson was absolutely right. There is a fiscal note and a fiscal cost. Particularly if you look on your amendment on the 0389 amendment to line 1.9, where there's actually contracting potential, points to the fact that there really needs to be a fiscal note with this piece of legislation.
Mr. Chairman, to respond to that, as I say at the beginning, this is language that was developed by Representative Lauffer, sent to me. I will work with the department and Representative Lauffer as this goes forward, as it comes to ways and means. If there's a large cost that is not able to be part of the regular budget, the private administration will try to address it then, because you're absolutely right, I will not set something out that has that kind of system. But I guess at this particular point, if the chair would indulge me to make sure that that at least we have it on so we can have a fiscal analysis done.
And Mr. Chair, this is one technical change I would recommend. The Office of Geographic and Demographic Analysis exists today, but is not likely to exist in the next biennium, because we're taking the biggest piece of that, which is the Land Management Information Center, and moving it into a new Geographic Information Office. We think the remaining functions will probably report directly to the director, so I would recommend that that phrase in line 1.4 be changed to the Commissioner, meaning Commissioner of Administration.
So, Mr. Chairman, if, with your indulgence and with the Commissioner being here, I think we would say then on page 1.4 that we would strike the word Director of the Office of Geographic and Democratic Analysis and insert the Commissioner of Finance.
No.
Or the Administration?
It's under 16 days. Yes, the Department of Administration would be happy to do this task.
Okay.
Thank you.
I would move that the correction.
Does everyone understand the change? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Change has been made. Any other discussion? Okay.
Sure.
We need to adopt the amendment, I believe. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Mr. Chairman, then I think that the talks about the amendments and the bill itself, I would then renew my motion that House File 2038 as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative
Steiner. Just a quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Solberg. I can understand when it comes to the cash flow account having something that's pretty mathematical and formula driven. I just don't quite understand when it comes to the budget reserve why that's as much the case, since that is kind of a policy choice, isn't it? I mean, we or any legislature or governor can choose to have a higher one or lower one. Some people say that having one too high is, you know, overtaxation. Others say we should have it high so we can cushion the blow in tough times like this. I'm just interested in general about why there needs to be mathematical precision on something that's really kind of a policy choice. Some people want a big one, some people want a small one.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, I think you're absolutely right. There's recommendations coming from different groups that said we should have a 10% and a 5%, we've established over the last 2 years a 650, and of course, that gets eaten up first if there's a deficiency. I understand the philosophy of having a budget reserve. I also, quite frankly, have kind of bought into the Representative Kahn philosophy that we may have a huge budget reserve and take, let's say, $2 billion out of taxpayers' pockets and let it set there for the state government to be stable and everyone will feel good. Whereas Representative Kahn's philosophy is, you know, don't have any budget reserve, and if we have a difficulty, have an automatic click on, and let the taxpayers keep their money if we don't need it. This one, I think if you look at it, what it's asking for is to look at the variables and the coefficients that are on 2.8 to reflect the significant changes within those budget projections, and I think that's where we're trying our best to get a little bit better handle on the what is the proper reserve that we should have instead of just applying a percentage.
Before I call on Representative Kahn, we'd like to welcome the third grade class from Cedar Crest Academy from Maple Grove, and Representative Tepton's daughter and her classmate, Mara. Why don't you all stand up so we can welcome
you. Which one is the daughter?
My daughter is the one in the last row. Wave, Mara.
Hey. Or higher.
We welcome everyone's daughter and son as well. Thank you for coming. Representative Kahn.
Well, I don't really have any comments except the one line that Representative Solberg omitted from my proposal is the fact that we still have budget the first thing I want to make is that what we're doing is that we're replacing a number with a percentage instead. If we're looking at the error, the percentage is clearly a less wrong way to go than just putting an absolute dollar number in. My principle on the trigger tax mechanism is that we fill a budget reserve by collecting from everybody, whether we're going to need it or not, and we keep it. If we don't fill it until we use a trigger tax, because usually the problem is that the economy's gone down. If we put a trigger tax on it, a trigger income tax surcharge, what you're doing is you're only taking the money from the people who haven't been affected by that downturn, because they still have money to be taxed. And it's the same you're looking at the same amount of money or the same amount of money that you'll need, but it's just a different set of people that it's being collected from. So.
Representative Fulbert?
And I believe one of the reasons, if I can just one more thing to put in, and so maybe we ought to put some language in here about making them look at that too, is that this one of the reasons we said we've had a budget reserve is that it keeps our credit rating high and our bonds are less and so forth. But the people who do that have said that a trigger tax, as long as it's automatic, it doesn't have to be initiated by an act of the governor or by the legislature, works as well as a budget reserve. So.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was kind of thinking that a trigger tax on when times are hard might be nicely paired with a trigger tax down so that when times are good, those same people would pay a little less. Maybe we could kind of partner those two together.
Mr. Chair, I don't
want to get
philosophical.
Trigger tax is that it goes on and off.
So it does go off.
Yeah, it does off.
But we're not discussing that right now. We are.
Representative Diffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the Chair of the Ways and Means just told me to focus on his bill, so I'll keep my question for Representative Kahn for another day.
Representative Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wonder if we don't have a budget compromise right here in this room with Representative Kiffmeyer's suggestion. I like it. Maybe she could talk to the governor about it. If we have a blink on tax when times are tough, right now we need that, and then we don't permanently reduce taxes when times are bad because times are good because we know they're going to be bad again, then the tax could blink on and off as needed. That might be actually something we could all support.
So the call maybe should go into the governor to join in an open meeting. Mr. Chairman, I would then renew my motion that House File 2038, as amended, be recommended passed and referred to Ways and Means.
Representative Solberg renews his motion that House File 2038 be recommended to pass and referred to Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion passes. Mr.
Chairman, before we...
Before
we adjourn, I just wanted to mention that depending on how quickly they can act with the Health and Human Services bill, that may be before us as early as Wednesday. That's the goal, and we could be meeting either in the morning or after session, depending on when the paperwork and so on comes forward. But figure that let's, at least at this point in time, we're going to try to meet on the 22nd to move that bill out. Remember last week I mentioned that we deal with that one as soon as they were able to get the fiscal notes and put the bill together, and it looks like we're moving forward.
Any other announcements? If not, committee is adjourned.